Well, good day to you. It's Joel with For King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
And the real question for every re-leader is, am I willing to plant a tree and build something that I may never taste the fruit of it?
It's about time, because we're going there.
Do you consider yourself an academic type? One that likes to have learned conversations with super educated people?
Well, if that's the case, I'm glad that you're here. My name is Bianca Waters-Olthoff, and I am the host of We're Going There. And on today's episode, we have Pastor John Chastain on the show today. And yes, anyone who decides to get their PhD, you better believe I'm going to be flossing doctor in front of their name all the time. Now, Dr. John, he's going to kill me for calling him Dr. John, but Dr. John is not only a pastor and a leader and a university president, but he's also a friend. And I have watched him lead through some chaotic times. And he has coined this phrase, which I think is going to impact our lives. And that is to re-lead and to be a re-leader. Most of the times we do not start things, but we inherit them and take them over. And when that happens, we need to have some practical handles on how to do that well. And that's what we're discussing on today's episode. For more information about Dr. John, they'll be in the show notes. But until then, put on your thinking caps because, dear scholar, we are going to school. Well, Dr. John, I am privileged, and you're going to be annoyed because when we talk on the phone or when we text, it's always just John, right? But like,
just call me John. I'm not, you don't.
Oh, absolutely not. You do not put yourself in that much school and not have it tattooed on your eyelids, Dr. John.
No, I appreciate it.
So what I love about having this mode of communication with my podcast friends and family is that I get to have conversations with people that are my real life friends. And I get to introduce them to my podcast friends. And a little bit about our history is I spoke at Victory Church. Was it, I'm almost positive, was it 2018?
It probably before that, because it was before I went to the university. So it's probably 17, maybe.
Oh, good grief. We're getting old.
Oh my gosh. Look at all this gray in my beard.
Getting better with time. That's what I like
That's
to
right.
say.
We're seasoned.
Yes. So a little bit about how I got to meet you, and then I want you to give me a little bit more of a formal introduction about what you're doing now. But when we met, you had walked the church, Victory Church, through such a crazy transition. And this season, we're talking about new beginnings. Nice. And one of the things that I love is that you find beauty from ashes. You know how to clean up the muck and the mire. And you can paint a picture of restoration and redemption that is so healthy and so healing. Now, there's certain people that will bring the razzmatazz. There's certain people like, I think I lead more like that, like visions of grandeur and we can do this. That's very motivational. But what I love about your style of leadership, you're so calculated. You're so steady. You're so sure. You are, how tall are you? Like six?
6'7".
11?
6'7".
you're this giant. You're this force, and yet so gentle, so kind, and so pastoral. So today on the podcast, I just want to let you know you have the right and the invitation to pastor people who feel like they are forced to pick up a mess that they didn't make. Yeah. And so with that, welcome to We're Going There. Tell us a little bit, before we talk about your insane ability to clean up messes that you didn't make, tell us a little bit about what you're doing now, what you get to do, and the things that you're loving as we dive into the podcast.
First off, thank you for having me on. Thanks for being my friend. And man, I should keep you on speed dial. If I'm having a depressed day, I'll just call Bianca and say, hey, tell me something encouraging.
Well, I do not lie. I only share the truth.
No, Michelle and I love you so much, and we appreciate you. Now, I'm a pastor. I pastor a church called Victory Church, and we have three campuses in Oklahoma City, and we have one campus in the DFW metro area in Grapevine, Texas. And for the last 5 years, up until just a few months ago, I was the president of the King's University in Southlake, Texas, and did that for 5 years where we were doing both. And now I'm just a regular old pastor, and I'm loving life. I'm trying to raise teenagers. I've got a 16-year-old daughter, and a 13-year-old son. So we're just in the middle of it and loving life. So
I love that you said a regular old pastor. Well, you're speaking at conferences, traveling the world, beating me on Peloton and writing books. So that's another podcast for another day.
But I don't know about all that.
Back in 2017, you were openly sharing about what the church had walked through. So you did not expect yourself to be in the position that you're in. And this is what I want to speak to for somebody who's listening on the podcast. Though they are not a church pastor of four campuses or a university president or even a dad or even a parent, but just someone who just feels like I am forced to really make sense of things that make sense. I'm forced to pick up a mess that I didn't make. Walk us through kind of that season, what it looked like for you. Of course, you don't have to include lots of details, but whatever you feel comfortable sharing, let us know kind of like the depths of what you had to clean up.
Yeah. So I became a campus pastor at this church that I'm now the pastor. I left higher ed. I was in higher ed before that. All of my degrees are in higher ed. Never wanted to be a pastor. Never thought I'd be a pastor. I became a campus pastor. And then in 2014, the senior pastor, founding pastor, had a moral failure with his spouse. And great man, still is a great man. And I stepped on the heels of that in November of 2014. And so, you know, fast forward several years, really where I realized this, Bianca, was I was actually with one of our friends that we share, pastor friend, and we were working out, hanging out, and he said, hey, I want you to help me do some pastors roundtables, and let's help pastors plant churches. And I go, man, I don't know how to plant churches. Like, I've never done that. I don't plant churches. You call Bianca. Like, I don't know how to do that. And he was like, well, then what do you do? And like this pointed question just in my face, then what do you do and how do you help pastors do it? And something just kind of bubbled up out of my chest without me thinking. I said, I fix broke stuff. And he said, then you need to help pastors figure out how to fix broke stuff. And so at that time, I was the president of a university and I was the lead pastor of a church. And for the first time in my life, I knew what I was called to do. And so, what I realized is everything that I've ever put my hand to, I didn't start it, build it, or grow it. I restarted it. I rebuilt it, and I had to regrow it. And so what I realized is all through the Bible, there are a lot of people that did this. Nehemiah was the guy that picked up the broken pieces of the wall and put it back together. And Joshua was a re-leader that came after Moses. And Elisha was a re-leader that came after Elijah. And they came and rebuilt the temple. When Nebuchadnezzar tore down the temple, somebody had to come back and rebuild this thing. And so there are a lot of rebuilders in the Bible. And I think there's a lot of people who may be frustrated in leadership because they're trying to start, build, grow when really they were born to rebuild, regrow, and vice versa. There may be people that are trying to pick up the pieces of a broken church when really they're called to plant one. And knowing which gift set we are, who's called to bring restoration and redemption, and who's called to start from scratch. And I think there's a big difference.
So you clearly have a bent towards leadership and you swim in the pond of very strong leaders. And subtle flex, I love your humility. You're like, Bianca and I share a certain pastor friend. I'm going to say his name. I'm going to say his name because we love Pastor Craig Rochelle up in here. Wait, am I saying this with Pastor Craig?
Yep.
I knew it. We love us some Pastor Craig Rochelle up in here.
Yes,
okay?
We do. So,
I love your humility, but I think it bears stating who you're swimming in ponds with because you are really tailor-made to speak to leaders. This is what I do know, that there's people who listen to this podcast who feel like, well, I don't identify as a leader. I'm not starting a church. I don't own a business. So this is what I'm really, really wanting to like tap into your leadership. You specialize in tailoring talks for pastors and for leaders, but you are also a pastor yourself. And so I want you to kind of walk us through what does reimagining look like after something's been ruined? Let's just start there because there is somebody who's walking through a divorce. There's somebody who's lost their job. There's somebody who feels like they're having a quarter life crisis or a midlife crisis. You know, the sunset years are dawning. Speak to that person and like, where is the point? And when is the point that we have to stop and ask ourselves, what do I do now?
Yeah. I found this really beautiful parallel between when they came to rebuild the temple. And that's really what I would push any leader towards if they're trying to rebuild and regrow. is there's this beautiful picture of Zerubbabel and Joshua, these two guys that most people have never heard of. Like, everyone's heard of Solomon, and everyone's heard of the guy who built the temple, but no one loves to see the guy who rebuilds it. And when there's devastation, people flock. I remember when I first became lead pastor, we were packed, and I was like, man, we're going to make it. This is great. We're packed. What I didn't realize is people love to watch the NASCAR wreck, right? They come to see the crash at the NASCAR race or the fight at the hockey game, but nobody stays in the stands to watch the car be rebuilt. And there's only a select few that know how to do this. And so the first thing I would say for me is it really is an identity thing, because we live in a culture that loves to celebrate big names and the Elon Musks and the Steve Jobs and the guys who start, build, grow. We like to see the work finished in our culture. And the first issue anybody has to go through if they're a rebuilder is this is not about you. And you probably aren't going to be famous. You probably aren't going to have your name in lights. You're probably not going to be speaking at conferences, but you're doing one of the greatest works you could ever do. Nehemiah went back and rebuilt the wall. You talk about not sexy. Like, there's nothing sexy about picking up rocks and putting them stacked. Nobody walked by and go, wow, would you look at that wall? But it was necessary to protect what they had built with the temple. And so there's such a identity crisis in pastors and leaders. And what the Lord exposed in me several years ago is that I had an orphan heart. It was the first work God did on me was when Jesus said, I will not leave you as orphans, because we're so tempted to behave like orphans. Like, we got to perform to be accepted. We got to do something in order to have something. There goes my emoji. In order to be something. So I got to do something. And then if I do something, I'll have something. And if I have something, I'll be something. And it's actually the opposite of that. Jesus was baptized, and before he ever did a work, the Lord said, this is my son. His father said, this is my son in whom I'm well pleased. It wasn't at the end of Jesus's ministry. It was at the beginning, before he did a single thing. He was accepted. He was loved. And his father was proud of him. And that's the way we're called to rebuild, is I don't have to do anything to earn my father's love. And so there's so many steps in the releading, rebuilding process. But I feel like God always wants to do a work in us before he does a work through us. And so it always is a work God's wanting to do inside of us first. It's a calling.
Let's do the work. So in the time that we have together, like, I'm always cautious when doing podcasts that it's not like a book pitch, but I'm not trying to pitch the book. The book is just really good. And I feel like this is going to be really healing and helpful to a lot of people. And side note, for everyone who's watching on YouTube, Dr. John has this emoji preset on this platform that when he does like thumbs up, there's the fireworks for bubbles. So for those who are watching on YouTube, you're welcome. And those that are listening on the podcast, you might want to go check it out, because I love it. I love it. He doesn't know how to turn it off. And I think it's amazing.
I think it's a special anointing I have, really. I don't think it's the computer.
Yes, it's the anointing.
Okay, Lord.
So, let's define re-leadership. And then what are the key characteristics of a re-leader? Someone who is rebuilding their life, like, speak to them.
Yeah. So actually it was Craig that came up with that word for me when we were sitting there that day. And he said, you know what, John, you're not a leader at all. You're actually something more important. You're actually a re-leader. And what I've realized is that most people are re-leaders. They didn't start the department. I inherited a building. I inherited culture. I inherited staff. I inherited policies and procedures. I inherited bylaws. I inherited a board. Like, I didn't start any of this. I just had to take what I got. And so most people fall into that category. Bianca, you planted and started from scratch, which is really hard. But most people, there was a vice president before them. There was a CFO before them. There was a pastor before them. And so we're coming in trying to change culture in an environment with a group of staff that we didn't even hire. Like, I didn't hire it. Like, I'd fire all these people if it were up to me. But I got to figure out how to change the culture with what I've got. And so so that's really the thought of a re-leader, is somebody who has to come in and rebuild or regrow or re-lead something that they didn't build. It's a completely different gift set. It really is.
Okay. So give me a couple key characteristics. Like, someone who feels like, wait, is that me? Yeah. I want to list off these key characteristics so someone can identify me. Like, wait a minute, that is me.
So think about a couple of different concepts, right? So if you start a church or start a business, you can blaze a trail and go as fast as you want. It's mm-hmm. you are going a million miles an hour. It's a sprint. It's a 100-yard dash. You're trying to build something and get it in the air, right? To use an analogy of an airplane, you got to get this thing in the air quickly. You have a launch date, a rocket, whatever analogy you want to use. When you're a re-leader, that thing's been in the air for 10 years, 15 years, and it used to fly at 60,000 feet. Now it's down to 20,000 feet, and I got to rebuild this thing in the air. And so there's a lot of patience involved. That's probably one of the – all leadership takes patience. I'm not saying that, but it takes a long time. I remember whenever I first became the lead pastor, I called Brady Boyd, a friend of mine, and I said, man, he's one of the greatest re-leaders I know. He took a church in Colorado Springs, high-profile church. And I said, man, how long did it take you to change the culture? Because I'm struggling. And he said, man, I hate to tell you this, but it took me 5 years to change the culture. And I was like, dagger to the chest. Are you kidding me? But it really does take that long to shift culture, depending on how old your organization is. So it really is a patience game. And one of the biggest mistakes re-leaders make, Bianca, is they take the helm of the ship. Let's say you're the new captain of the cruise ship, right? And you're going to come in and there's hundreds or thousands of people on board your cruise ship. Any leader can figure out which direction to go, right? That's instincts. Any leader can get on the cruise ship and say, we're heading north. We should be heading south. It's not hard to figure out what to do. The hardest part of leadership is not figuring out what to do, but how to do it. Because the greatest cruise ship captains can turn the ship 180 degrees and no one on the ship even knew. Like, you were sitting there eating your creme brulee at dinner and the ship was turning the other direction and you never knew it. The temptation in leadership is to take the helm and just take the wheel and turn it. But you're going to give your organization whiplash. You're going to give your staff whiplash. You're going to toss people off board. So it's a lot of strategy. It's a lot of patience and knowing this is a marathon, not a sprint.
So, okay. I'm thinking of those that are inheriting, like you're saying most people inherit things. I'm thinking of those that have inherited something and they are facing the same sort of issues that you faced within like culture or just this is the way it is because this is the way that it's always been. In slowly turning the cruise ship, to continue on the analogy, for someone who's kind of stuck there as well, even like I'm thinking about blended families. I'm thinking about families that are coming together and raising kids together. And like, how do you turn that? How do you change the culture of a household? How do you change the culture of the cubicles and the offices that you work in, or even just a roommate? So for those that kind of feel like, how do I change this? What are some key handles that you learned or key things that you learned that you want to give us as handles for those that as well.
Do you need to catch your breath? Americans spend an average of 90% of their time indoors and take about 20,000 breaths a day. The indoor air that we breathe is 2 to 5 times more polluted than outdoor air, and in some cases, up to 100 times more polluted, according to some recent research. So what's the solution? Introducing an air purifier that captures the attention of established media outlets like CNN, Money, ABC, and more. What is it? The Air Doctor. The Air Doctor filters out 99% of dangerous contaminants that your lungs don't have to. This includes pollutants such as allergens, pollens, pet dander, dust mites, mold spores, and even bacteria and viruses that make you sick. Air Doctor comes back with a 30-day breathe easy money back guarantee. So if you don't love it, just send it back for a refund minus the shipping. Head to airdoctorpro.com and use the promo code WGT and you'll receive up to $300 off of air purifiers. Exclusive for podcast customers, you will receive a free 3-year warranty on any unit, which is an additional $84 value. Lock in this special by going to airdoctorpro.com, airdoctorpro.com, and use the promo code WGT.
I think the very first thing a leader has to do if they want to turn the ship, so to speak, is number one, to build trust. Like, that is, it's not rocket science, but it's hard to do. And there's no magic bullet. There's nothing you can do in a week or 2 weeks or a month to gain trust. We've all heard the saying, trust is gained by the spoonful and lost by the bucketful. Mm-hmm. And if you're a re-leader, you're coming in right after the bucket has been emptied. Mm-hmm. And no one on staff trusts anybody, depending on the context, right? Our context was moral failure. So I had to come in quickly, and there were some financial things involved too. So I have an entire congregation who no longer trusts a pastor, no longer trusts the church. And so I had to come in and make changes, okay? So I like to say you build a, I think Andy Stanley may have said it. I can't remember who said it first, but you build a, it's easier to build a guardrail at the top of the mountain than a hospital at the bottom. And so I had to, we were at the bottom of the mountain, but how can I gain trust back? Okay, let's put some policies and procedures in. I'm not going to travel by myself anymore. Okay. We're not going to meet with the opposite sex in offices without a window open or a door open or something. So those are silly examples, but ways to build trust, and trust is built slowly. And then once there's trust built, when you turn the wheel, when you have seasons where you got to turn that wheel a little hard and everyone's like, whoa, I felt that. What just happened? Everyone's, oh, but we trust John. We know him. We know his character. We know his integrity is there. And so every leader has to pivot and make tough calls at any given time. But without trust, it's almost impossible. You're going to have a really hard time. And there's always going to be naysayers, right? So when Zerubbabel came back to rebuild the foundation of the temple, it talks about this in Zechariah and Ezra and Haggai, if anybody wants to go and read this story. But at some point, he gets so discouraged that he quits. All of the people start coming against him. But before he quits, he rebuilds the foundation of this temple. And it says that some of the old priests were there. Some of the people were there that had seen the former temple. And it says that they were weeping so loudly that they couldn't distinguish whether they were happy or sad, right? And so when you're rebuilding something back, there are those that were there before and they saw the temple in its beauty and they see what you're starting to do. And they're just like, man, I don't see it. I don't understand it. And all of these verses that we see on coffee mugs and here in sermons are from this story. Like in Zechariah 4, it says, despise not small beginnings, for the Lord rejoices to see the work begin. That is the temple. That is a re-leading journey. Mm. And it's like, because re-leading is so discouraging, because you'll work for 2 years and see no progress because you're just trying to build a foundation. It took, after he built the foundation, he quit for 17 years. Most people don't really realize that. He built the foundation of the temple and quit. And that's when this prophetic word came to Zerubbabel. Hey, despise not small beginnings. Yeah. You will place the final cornerstone in the temple, like this encouragement to get him back on board to helping, because re-leading and rebuilding is brutal. It's brutal. It's a thankless job. But that verse says the Lord is rejoicing when you begin. Like you would think it would say the Lord rejoices to see the work completed. It doesn't say that. He's rejoicing when you just get started and do the small things that no one sees that you're doing.
So let me repeat back to you what I've been hearing. So for somebody who feels like they are in the middle of a mess that they didn't make and yet have to clean up, the first thing that they're going to need is patience. They're 100%. Going to right the ship. The second thing they need to really hold on to is rebuilding trust, because trust has been lost. And your situation was very different than maybe what someone else is dealing with. But as I'm listening to you, I'm like, absolutely, they have to trust you as their leader. And then not despising the small things and not expecting the harvest instantaneously.
Don't quit. Yeah.
Don't quit. That's right. Okay. So when people feel like they are now, the mess has been picked up and now they're in this position of leadership, they're in this position of authority. What are some of the challenges that they might face? So one of the things I love to do with talking to people is like, hey, step out, step into the transformation journey. Amazing. Then they get there and then they're left with it. Okay, now what? So for those that kind of feel like I have stepped into re-leadership or re-marriage or re-leading a church or business. Now, what are some of the things that you're learning years later that maybe you didn't realize were going to be hurdles that you can forewarn people that are in this re-leadership journey?
Yeah, I think one thing that I tried to do my best at is always honoring. You know, I think we're such an emotional species, so to speak, that a lot of times we're just so ready to move on and press on, and you want to fix it and move on. And what you're trying to do is diminish the pain and diminish the hurt. And what I realized when I first came in is there were so many wounded people, like so many people were hurt and devastated. Actually, it was harder to lead the staff than it was the congregation. The staff were the ones that were the most wounded. And so letting people heal and having these times where we would sit in staff meetings and just cry. I was meeting with a pastor just yesterday and he has just taken on a church and he's like, I got this plan. I got this vision. I'm ready to go. And I said, man, I understand that's your first instinct is just to get out of this crap pile as quickly as possible I almost said a bad word and you'd have had to believe it. But to get out of this, like, nobody wants to stay where we're at. But if you push a bunch of people into the promised land without healing first, right? There's a reason why on the banks of the Jordan River in Joshua chapter 5, it says they circumcised themselves and then they stayed where they were until they healed. And so I think that's such an important, I said, man, just weep with your staff. Let them cry. Let them vent. Let them cuss. Like, let them lean into the pain of it and own the pain of it and let it linger. And I think that that's always a temptation is to, man, this sucks. And we see where we need to get to. And can we just get out of that? That can be in marriage, right? That can be in our financial situation. It can be in anything we're trying to relead, anything that's broken. And the truth is, Bianca, sometimes we got to fix stuff we did break. You know, that maybe that's a second book, but sometimes we got to fix stuff we didn't break. Sometimes I broke it and I got to man up and be like, you know what? I was a bad leader. I was a bad husband. I was bad with my finances. I was bad with my mental health. I was bad with my physical health. And it's time to go to the gym. There's always something that needs to be reled in front of us if we have the courage to do it and to step into it. It's never easy. I tell my kids all the time. It's like my speech I tell my kids and they roll their eyes at me. This is what I tell my kids all the time. I say, if it were easy, everybody would do it. Okay. If getting a degree was easy, everybody would do it. So leading is hard. It's not for the faint of heart. And if it's not a calling, you'll never make it. If you don't feel called to it, when Zerubbabel was called to rebuild the temple in Ezra, it says the Lord sparked the enthusiasm of Zerubbabel. So there was something that happened in his heart, in his spirit, that empowered him to do it. So if a leader doesn't feel that spark, they should run, because and that's depressing, but it's a calling. Like, leadership is a calling. And if you don't feel that spark, don't take the job. Don't do it. So it's hard work, right?
Absolutely. I'm thinking of Marie Kondo and the spark joy conversation. Like, yeah. I'm hearing you right now. I'm like, oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. So before we wrap this up, I want to end with, you've given us several biblical examples, but for somebody that might not be familiar with, you know, some of these biblical characters, I want you to tell a testimony story either from yourself or someone else, because I want this to feel very practical. I want someone to listen, like, wait a minute, as hard as that is, I don't have patience. I am looking for the big whiz bang rather than the small beginnings. You know, for someone who doesn't want to put in the effort to build a trust and they just feel tired, I want you to share a story of maybe the other side of staying with a yes. But before we go there, I think this is important. What happens when you're in the process of rebuilding a marriage, rebuilding a business, rebuilding the church, and you just hit a wall? Like, you're tired, you hit burnout, you still have the why, but you just are losing the how. Speak to that person that's in a weary spot, and what would you encourage them with?
Yeah, man, those are such great questions. And I think, first off, before I say anything, I want to be really sensitive to, there's so many listeners and there's so much context to each story. And so it's hard, you know, I don't want to say something that is just suck it up and do hard things. No, sometimes life sucks and it's not that easy, right? And so I want to be super sensitive to that. But I think that really is such a good story where in this particular passage, but there's all kinds of those stories where we're going to hit brick walls. We're going to hit brick walls. I'll tell you a quick story. When you were saying that, it reminded me of a story of Michelle, you know, my wife. Mm-hmm. So I became a pastor and I was ABD on my doctorate. So, which means all but dissertation, which means I'd put in a lot of time and it just became too much. I became this pastor. I'd never pastored. Plus I'm in the pits of hell trying to lead this church and relead this church. And so I just quit. I quit my doctorate. I put it down. And I was like, I don't need this thing. I'm a pastor now. I guess I missed my calling. And several years passed and the deadline was approaching that if I don't finish this doctorate degree by a certain deadline, you have to start from scratch. And Michelle, one day she said, you need to finish your doctorate degree. And I was like, why? I don't need to do that. I'm not going to use it. It's pointless. And she said, 'cause you're not a quitter. And I was like, dadgummit. And then she said something to me. She said, John, someday you're going to be dead. Well, thanks, babe. Someday you're going to be dead, and your kids are going to be sitting at your funeral watching that slideshow of your life, and they need to see you in your cap and gown, right? So what she did was she was zooming me out, and the temptation is always to be so zoomed in to my situation in the here and now that I fail to see this situation in the timeline of my whole life spread out. And she was giving me the ability to fast forward. And that's really what's happening in that passage of scripture, with the Lord saying, hey, you're going to finish this. Well, and she was giving me this picture of not now, not tomorrow, not next week, years from now. And why not quitting was important. And I think for anybody that's struggling in their marriage, for anybody that's struggling to lead, for anybody that's struggling with their physical health, it's so important for us to get out of the immediate pain of what it feels like right now and to see years down the road where, you know what, I can do this. I can do this today because of the reward, and not just me, not just what I'm doing, but generationally, like there's something generational. And Michelle, at one time, wanted to plant these trees in our backyard. We used to have an acreage in Oklahoma, and I knew we weren't going to stay in this house forever. So she was obsessed with where to plant these trees. And I was like, who cares, babe? We're never even going to be here to see him full grown. And she helped me understand, but someday somebody will sit under the shade of this tree. And the real question for every re-leader is, am I willing to plant a tree and build something that I may never taste the fruit of it? And there was a guy that moved in next door to me in Oklahoma City one time, that they were building the tallest skyscraper in Oklahoma. And he moved to the city, and I met him in our front yard, and I said, hey, what are you doing here? He goes, I'm here to build the foundation of the Devon Tower. And I said, oh, wow, how long is that going to take? He said, it'll take 3 years. I'm like, it'll take you 3 years to build the foundation. And he said, yep. And I kind of said a smart aleck thing that I probably shouldn't have said. I said, how does it feel to build something that no one will ever see? No one's ever going to drive by the Devon Tower and say, wow, would you look at that foundation? And he said, you know what, John, you're right. But he said, the height of that tower is dependent upon how well I do my job in building this foundation. And it's true in our marriages. It's true in raising kids. It's true in our churches. It's true in our businesses. I'm building a foundation of Victory Church. I'm the interim pastor. You're the interim pastor of Father's House. I'm the interim pastor because I want it to live past me. So I'm just a foundation builder. And so when I look at it in that sense, I can suck it up today because someday, 10, 20 years from now, somebody's going to be blessed because of the strength of the foundation that we're building in our marriages, in our kids, in our finances, in my health. And so I can do it because it's bigger than me, right? It's so much bigger than we are.
Yeah. I think there's nothing else that I want to add to that. That's the perfect end cap, except this is the last thing that I will say. It's from your book. It's on the chapter on required. You just have this simple statement, and I highlighted it. When we do hard things, God shows up. Sometimes God doesn't do a miracle for us, and it won't be posted on social media or a coffee mug, but it's not a phrase that we want to like shout, but it's when we're called to do hard things that no one else will do, God will meet us there in that place. I've stepped into being a senior lead pastor in this season, and I want to tell you have gone before and that you have paved roads that people like me now get to walk on. So for anyone that feels like they're in the middle of the mess that they are forced to pick up, I just want to point your eyes, of course, to Jesus, and also look at the saints that have come before you, like Dr. John, and like who are saying, hey, yeah, it sucks right now, but it's not for us, it's for future generations. I want to say thank you. Thank you for your yes. Thank you for stepping up, and thank you for helping others through the things that you've learned in this process. For those that want more information about this book, there'll be a link in the show notes, but Re-Leader, How to Fix What You Didn't Break. I don't like book pitches. I don't like having book conversations, but it wasn't the book. It was how you're helping people lead through a mess. So thank you for being my friend. Thank you for being brilliant. Thank you for putting academia at the forefront in Christian faith and for Christian leaders. You are re-inspiring me, reinvigorating me, and reigniting me in being a re-leader. I appreciate you. I love you and Michelle. And when I'm in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, I am going to visit you, and we'll enjoy the Jesus juice together. So thank you, friend.
We love you, Michelle, and I love you a ton. Thank you so much.
Let me do that again. Sorry, Madi. For those that want more information about Dr. John, there'll be links to his social media profile as well as his website. In addition to that, if this podcast has blessed you, consider posting what you learned and tagging Dr. John and myself, and 5 lucky winners will receive a copy of this book. No, I did not get these books for free. I'm personally going on Amazon to boost Amazon ratings and scales. Every author knows the importance of that. And 5 lucky winners will win a copy of this book. It has been an inspiration to me, and I know it'll be a resource for you. Love you, family. We'll catch you next week. As we wrap up the podcast, I love to give honor where honor is due. If Dr. John's words have inspired you, if you've learned something, if you're applying something, show him some love online and tag him. Tag him on Instagram and me. And we'd love to share what you're learning with our friends and family. Thanks for being part of this podcast community. We love and appreciate you, and we'll catch you next time.